Good afternoon, Juicebox Music Podcast. Mark speaking. Please tell me how I may direct your call.
Hello and welcome to Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, and I have my emergency battery pack just in time for my weekly chat with Nicholas Moreau on video call. What's up, Nick?
What's up, man? Hey, Hunter, you always do these things where you introduce me. I thought of a couple this week just for you. Can I run them by you?
Hit me with them.
Okay. And here I am with the man who just went to San Francisco to open Hunter's Bar.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I got another one for you. I'm chatting with the man who since last Friday has been calling the Martini police. You think you like him? I'm working on him.
You know, maybe a little bit more work on there might be good for you, Nick.
I'm working on him.
Well, there's a lot of fodder this week for intros like that, I think. So what's up? How you doing?
Good. I'm excited about this chat we're gonna have. I wanted to, you know, before we get started, I think it's worth doing the PSA we usually do at the end. Yes, you listener who have never listened to the end of an episode, we usually remind people where they can find us at the end. We're going to do it at the beginning.
This is just, you know, for those who can't quite make it to the end of the episode, meaning most of you out there, this is just for you. We're just looking out for you today.
Yeah. So if you have any questions or comments or want to discuss some of our latest episodes or want to give us some advice on what you'd like to hear, please email us at juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com. And as always, please review us and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the various podcast apps you might have. And finally, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to get all our latest content. You'll find some cool stories. Hunter is going to be traveling some this summer. You'll be able to follow him. So yeah, please do that. And with that, that's the end of my PSA segment.
5-star reviews only, though.
Yeah.
I don't want to catch any of those 3-star reviews slipping up.
Or as Alex Turner would say, 4 out of 5 isn't bad.
We can do with 4 out of 5. It's a good review. If you have a taqueria on the roof, it's a fine review for a podcast as well.
Exactly.
Well, what's been going on with you, Nick? We got a big album release week this week. Obviously, we're going to dive into this new Arctic Monkeys album on this episode today, as I'm sure you can tell by the name of the episode. But any other musical news or excitement happening your way?
Yeah, this is news I wish I didn't have to talk about. You know, we're recording this on a Tuesday. We learned late last week that Scott Hutchinson, the lead singer of the Scottish band Frightened Rabbits, sadly passed away at the age of 36, I believe. He was reported missing starting Wednesday. The band and his family and friends put out some tweets saying they were worried about him and that if anybody had any information to find him. He had left kind of a goodbye message on Twitter that sounded pretty eerie in a way, and then late last week we found out he passed away. So all our condolences to his friends and family, all the Frightened Rabbit family as well, and rest in peace, Scott.
It's really sad we'll not get another record from that band. I know they meant a lot to a lot of people.
And he was a beautiful songwriter, a great songwriter, so really a tragic loss. And I think, you know, I have feelings of depression and whatever Scott was going through are no laughing matter. So if you know anybody that needs any help, please reach out to them or to someone.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of times we look at people who, you know, we put on a stage or a pedestal and we think they don't have the same sort of issues that everybody else does, when in fact they may even be exacerbated by that situation and by feelings of, you know, responsibility towards fans or other people.
Yeah.
That's too bad. Gone too soon, Scott.
Exactly.
Well, on a happier note, I wanted to talk about a show I went to over the weekend. here in LA. It was a short little tour combining two leading lights of Britpop. We had Side A, Mad Richard Ashcroft, frontman of The Verve, current solo artist, and Side B, Liam Gallagher, frontman of Oasis, now embarking on a very successful solo career with his one record, As You Were, that came out late last year. So they played a pretty full Greek theater here in LA in Griffith Park, a little bit of a rainy Friday night. Seemed like the crowd was 75% British and 95% intoxicated.
Exactly.
I was assuming that Richard Ashcroft was touring with like a solo band. I know he's still releasing a fair amount of material, but he actually took to the stage by himself, acoustic guitar. He normally is a frontman who doesn't play guitar on stage. He's known as a very like dynamic frontman. I never got to see The Verve live, unfortunately, just videos. But he was actually excellent. He sounded amazing and really played the songs that a casual crowd like that might want to hear. We're talking like the really big hits of the urban hymns era. Of course, closing with Bittersweet Symphony, but you have Sonnet, Drugs Don't Work, On Your Own, Lucky Man. The songs have really held up well, along with, I think, a couple of newer songs. One may have even been unreleased. He mentioned that they were on albums that did not sell very well. But he was up there in a white suit. Really impressed me. Almost kind of took the shine off of Liam in this double bill, which I was shocked by. Liam sounded a little rough around the edges during his set, but played a very crowd-pleasing set full of mostly Oasis hits and some highlights from his pretty good debut solo album. Word on the street is that he's been out here in LA working on the follow-up with Greg Kurstin and Andrew Wyatt of Mike Snow. That was kind of the songwriting nucleus for most of the hits off of his first record. And we're talking Greg Kurstin, the man who wrote Hello by Adele, among a lot of other massive hits. So he's in pretty good hands there.
Wow.
But it was a really fun night out, and you know, just a lot of classic songs and a crowd that was pretty mad for it, as they say.
It looked great. I saw some of your Instagram stories on the Juicebox Music Pod account.
Is so lit. People, check it out.
I know. I saw mainly, I think, the Bittersweet Symphony that Richard Ashcroft played.
Like a slower, bluesier rendition of it. That was the last song he played, of course.
Yeah, it was. That sounded awesome. What a great bill.
Yeah, what a great bill. I think they're only doing like six dates, you know, a couple here on the West Coast and Toronto, Philly, Boston, New York, that kind of thing. But if you're over there on the East Coast, check it out. Tickets were very reasonable.
That's good.
But I guess I'm imagining most of us have been pretty engaged in the records that have come out this past week. Has anything else crossed your desk, Nick, besides those?
To be honest, there's two records that I really listened to this week. Was obviously the Arctic Monkeys one, which we'll talk about, and then the Beach House record. And I'd rather just save the Beach House conversation for the next episode we'll probably do around Beach House.
Yeah, we'll table that for next time.
Yeah.
That's too much in one week here.
Yeah, it's really just, you know, the only things I've been listening to right now. It's a lot to digest.
For sure. Well,
have you listened to anything else?
Barely. You know, I got the vinyl copy of the Arctic Monkeys record the day it came out in the mail from Domino. Thanks, guys. And it has been spinning nonstop. We've been, you know, there's been a little Beach House. I still can't shake this Casey Musgraves record, too. So Golden Hour keeps getting a lot of play around my house. Great cleaning music. House cleaning music, pretty good on the cooking front. I wouldn't necessarily single it out as a definitive cooking album, but it's not going away anytime soon. She is actually on tour opening for Harry Styles right now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Getting poppy. Actually, you just reminded me, I did listen to a record I'd already listened to, but I listened to it while cooking. And this was the Nils Fromm, I think is how you say it. Mm-hmm. Nils Fromm record that he released this year called All Melody. And while I don't know that it's a great cooking record, it's an excellent prepping record. While you're prepping your veggies and chopping.
Prep record.
Yeah, prep record. And it's the little known subgenre of cooking music. So
we are discovering, forging new territories in the musical landscape every episode on this show. First time we've had a great prepping record, best new prep 2018.
Exactly.
I've been wanting to check that album out. I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Well, you know what? If you're in the prepping mood, do it. But I also suspect that it's an amazing airplane record.
Oh, airplane record. I got a lot of plane travel coming up. I need to load up on some of those.
Exactly. That's why I'm mentioning it. I think you'd enjoy it. I think you'd probably pass out by song 4.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
This is a good thing.
I love the Pahlavian response that I have to some records. Mostly Souvlaki by Slow Dive puts me to sleep right away. It's a great record too, though. There's no quality judgment made on falling asleep on an airplane to an album. It's actually only a positive thing, right, Nick?
Exactly, because I can't fall asleep on airplanes. So if a record gets me there, it's a good thing. You know, I mentioned this when I went on vacation last time. We talked briefly in the episode before I left about listening to Brian Eno's music for airports. And I did. And I didn't make it past the first song.
Excellent. There's a band that I used to swear by on planes, this Austin, Texas-based band called Pure X. I don't know if they're still together anymore. I think the main guy put out a solo album a little while ago, but that's a, you know, if you're looking for a deep dive on a plane band, that'd be one to check out.
Pure X is great. I saw them opening for Foxygen here maybe 6 years ago, and they were amazing.
Really good, right?
Yeah, really good. And I just wanted to give a last shout out. I believe when this episode drops, we'll be close to, if not right around when our interview with the lead singer of the Dead Tongues will release.
Yeah,
Ryan Gustafson. So the new album from the Dead Tongues comes out Friday, May 18th. It's called Unsung Passage, and I've been listening to that album a lot as well. And it ticks a lot of boxes, and it's really good. I can't wait for you guys to hear the interview. And if it's already out, please go back and check it out, because I thought the conversation with Ryan was really good, and I'd encourage anybody to listen to his music.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Friend of the pod.
Exactly.
All right. Well, cool. Nick, I wanted to set the stage this week a little bit. Some people have been asking how you and I know each other and kind of the origin of the podcast here. And I was thinking back, I'm pretty sure one of the first times we ever hung out, if not like the first time, was at an Arctic Monkeys show. Am I right?
Oh, shit.
Hollywood Palladium? Yeah. That's true, right?
2009?
It was around the time of Humbug.
Or yeah, so it was like...
Maybe Humbug had just
moved
come
to
out.
LA. You just moved to LA.
Had just moved to LA. You were visiting...
I think you moved in
2009. Yeah.
2009 is when you moved.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. It was in October. I remember. I came to visit in October. Yeah.
So it was October 2009. It was college roommates with my younger brother. Shout out to Alex, who I'm pretty sure is not listening to this. and you came out to visit for work at the time, and the Monkees just happened to be in town.
Exactly. That's right.
I remember thinking at the time, I can't believe Arctic Monkees are big enough somewhere in the United States, like Los Angeles, to play a room as big as the Hollywood Palladium, which is about a capacity of about 5,000.
Yeah, it was it's actually such a weird thing to think about, because I think that week we saw them was the same week, like prior to that show, I think Nine Inch Nails were playing their final two shows before mm-hmm. they reunited again, but and they played at the Palladium two nights in a row. So, you know, obviously the at the time they were a little bit bigger than Arctic Monkeys, but still it is a big venue for 2009 Arctic Monkeys. At least it felt that way when we went.
And there is a tradition kind of British bands having a bigger audience in Southern California than anywhere else in the country, especially at first. You know, you think about the famous concert documentary 101, which was Depeche Mode performing at the Rose Bowl. And this was before Violator came out, before Personal Jesus and Enjoy the Silence and everything. They were already playing a massive football stadium here. So I think they were a little bit bigger here than they were in the rest of the country at the time. But this is two albums before their most recent record, AM, which I think came out in 2013. And basically blew the Arctic Monkeys up across the country and across around the world. They're definitely one of the biggest bands on the planet in the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I remember. So, you know, it's funny. I wanted to talk about kind of my relationship with the Arctic Monkeys. And I was going to mention that show. But, you know, I always felt they were big. Like when they first released their, you know, whatever people say I am, that's what I'm not, which is their debut. Mm-hmm. It was 2006. And that was one of the craziest summers of my life. I was, I believe, a sophomore in college. I was coming home to France, and that record was playing nonstop. And I thought, this is what adulthood is, sleeping on my friend's couch for 2 months and going out every night and having the Arctic Monkeys as the soundtrack to that summer.
Well, that is pretty much what that album is about, right? It's about being that age and staying up all night and, you know, not really thinking about next year, next month, tomorrow.
Exactly. And then, you know, shortly after that, we get the follow-up, which was, I think, just as good, you know.
Favorite Worst Nightmare?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was basically a year later, and we get this 1-2 punch. And I just felt that it was huge, because after that, when I went back to college in the States, my roommate was British, and he was just playing this record, these two records nonstop, to the point where I actually got sick of the Arctic Monkeys.
Well, the first album, I think, still holds as the fastest-selling debut album by a band in UK history. So they always have been big, especially if you're looking at it from a European perspective. But they certainly weren't being played all over the radio or on TV or anything like that at that time in the States.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, you know, maybe my exposure to the Arctic Monkeys was a little skewed, because, you know, being from Europe and having so many friends still living there, it was just kind of in the zeitgeist of our lives at that point. And then mm-hmm. my roommate being British, you know, it was interesting, because the only music he listened to was basically trance music or the Arctic Monkeys. shout out to Marcus, who is definitely not listening to this.
Well, yeah, I think if their sound had stayed the same, I don't think they would have become nearly what they have become in the U.S. And of course, AM, that album from 2013 is definitely the most American sounding of the records they've put out. And they've had this relationship with Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, especially beginning around their third album, Humbug, which he produced, and he kind of pops up on Suck It and See and AM from there, that I think had a lot to do with influencing their sound. But, you know, the first two albums definitely have some commonalities and a similar sound to them. But pretty much from there on, each record has been a bit of a departure. They haven't stuck to the same sound from album to album their entire career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, you know, when Humbug came out and right on when we saw them, I remember being disappointed in that album, because, you know, I loved the first two, and it felt like such a departure from their original sound. And I remember, I think you were pretty high on it, but I remember having this conversation with you saying, I don't think I like this album. And looking back at it now, I wonder if it's not my favorite album of theirs.
It has aged really, really well. I was just thinking about that this week. And I mean, I was all on board with that because I like the Arctic Monkeys, but I was not, I didn't love them. And there's a few songs here and there that I really liked, and a few more songs on the second album, Favorite Worst Nightmare. But being a big fan of Queens of the Stone Age and then having that shift in sound on Humbug, I was all about it. And you know, up until this point, and I'm starting to debate whether I still believe this or not, but you know, their debut is considered to be kind of their best album by a lot of people, either that or AM. But I sort of felt like each album was a progression and each album was better than the one previous, or I responded to it stronger than the one previous, all the way up until AM, their fifth album. I was like, each one of these records is better and better. And now I kind of go back and look at the first album and I'm like, well, that one, you know, has an incredible amount of strength and really, really great songs on it. So I don't know. It's hard for me to do a ranking right now. And then of course we got to throw this new album into the mix.
Tunes, Hunter. The first one is full of tunes.
Full of tunes.
Yes.
Mega tunes.
Yeah.
They still play, you know, there's like probably what, 5 songs on that album that they still play regularly today that people definitely want to hear.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. No, it's full of hits. I love the first album. But I agree with you, like going back through the albums, I don't think there's one bad album. I think the one I was, so I didn't really like Humbug, and then when Suck It and See came out, I didn't really pay attention to it, and it took me a long time to listen to it. And at first, I just wasn't ready for another Arctic Monkeys album. And with time, it's become, you know, one that I regret not getting on board with early on.
Yeah, Suck It and See is kind of like more of a British, like, indie record in a way, like full of like shimmering guitars and like, you know, really catchy mid-tempo songs.
Yeah. And you know, the one thing that made me listen to Suck It and See is Pile Driver Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved the Alex Turner Submarine soundtrack. Mm-hmm. When it came out in 2011, I think it was definitely in my top 10 albums of the year, even though it was a 6-song EP. I just loved that movie and the soundtrack, and it really kind of made me appreciate his songwriting even more than I already had. I think he, you know, especially like now that we have all this body of work, I feel like he's one of the best lyricists and songwriters out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he keeps changing as a songwriter too. And I love like listening to the version of Pile Driver Waltz that is on Suck It and See and the one that's on the Submarine soundtrack, because they're quite different too, like with the instrumentation. And it helps me appreciate what the other members of Arctic Monkeys bring to the table, like the guitarist Jamie Cook and Nick O'Malley, the bass player, and Matt Felders, the drummer. You know, they're a very muscular unit and have really been since the beginning, and gives, you know, we have this songwriter, Alex Turner, who's so distinctive and is such an unusual lyricist in so many ways. And, you know, I think he's somebody who, when left to their own devices, may just put it on a little too much. And I think the band has always done a really good job of bringing out the best in his songs. And I feel like there's a difference between what an Arctic Monkeys song is and what an Alex Turner solo record would be.
Yeah, I would agree.
Which is to transition into this new album, because a lot of people have been saying that this could have been an Alex Turner solo record. We're talking about Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, the Arctic Monkeys 6th record, was out this past week, mostly written by Alex Turner on a Steinway piano that was given to him by his record label that he keeps in the spare room in his Hollywood Hills pad. What do you think? I mean, this is the one way I could start getting into this record is do you think this is... sounds like an Alex Turner solo album, or is this a new Arctic Monkeys album?
I think this is a new Arctic Monkeys album. So I have this theory. So around Humbug, Alex Turner kind of grew his hair out and kind of this new look, and the sound of the Arctic Monkeys changed a little bit.
And I think he got some Proactive too. Something happened skin there.
And then here around the sixth one, he's growing his hair out again. And look at this, a nice little left turn. I mean, compared to AM, this is a completely different sounding album. I would imagine that people that became fans of the Arctic Monkeys around AM, especially in the States,
which is a lot of people.
Yeah. This is a big punch in the face for them. But I have to say, like, I think, you know, I can understand why people think it's an Alex Turner solo record, because it's a little more, dare I say, lo-fi acoustic. But at the same time, like, the guitar treatments feels like an Arctic Monkeys guitar treatments. I think the songwriting is definitely more in the Arctic Monkeys vein than anything on Submarine in my mind. The lyrics are definitely, you know, very much some of his best lyrical work in my mind. And I think that the album as a whole might be, you know, as a unit for the idea of this tranquility based hotel and casino, might be one of the strongest unit as a whole. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is, like you said, a complete left turn for the band at this point, going from their most American rock-oriented riff-based album, AM, and their biggest hit ever, which was Do I Want to Know? Mm-hmm. And going into this concept album, has some sci-fi elements to it, mostly piano-based, very, very dense lyrically, is an incredibly ballsy move for a band on their level. And I have to, I really appreciate that they're still willing to do that at this point in their career, but it's not that big of a surprise based on, you know, the turns that they've taken from album to album.
You know, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. And I was going to say, one thing that I think really informs this record is Alex Turner's work with The Last Shadow Puppets,
yeah,
which is his side project with Miles Kane. The biggest difference being that we don't have to endure Miles Kane on this record. And of course, like the guys in Arctic Monkeys, and I agree with you, this is an Arctic Monkeys album. It's not an Alex Turner solo album. I mean, he's been the primary songwriter the whole time, but the slinky bass lines, the percussion, the Jamie Cook's guitar lines, they couldn't be from session musicians.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no, I agree. Did you not like everything you've come to expect from The Last Shadow Puppets?
I wasn't a huge fan. It had some songs here and there. But
I thought Aviation was one of, like just a great song.
And I saw them live, and Alex Turner and I think this is a foreshadowing this direction that they're going now, because he wasn't really playing guitar during the show, and he's in the tight leather pants and aviator shades with the long hair, and he's really embracing his rock god mode. Which I thought was kind of funny, just seeing the progression of him from this nerdy, like pimply teenager to where he's come now is pretty amazing. And, you know, he deserves it. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of Miles Kane as a songwriter or as a performer. So with those Last Shadow Puppet records, I like the first one a bit more, but I wish they were Alex Turner solo records.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. So earlier in the year, one of our first episodes was our second episode, the most anticipated albums of 2018. And we both talked about the Arctic Monkeys album, but you said, I don't expect much. It seemed like you were really cautious to have high expectations. And I think I'd like to hear, you know, what you think now.
Well, that's just me. And if you notice, there's a common thread with a lot of reviews that we do on the show where I go in not expecting much. And mm-hmm. Most of it's nice to be surprised. And, you know, sometimes those feelings are validated, but more often than not, I get to be like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And I really liked it. But yeah, it's been 5 years since AM. We had a pretty consistent run of albums up until then. And it seemed like, you know, five records kind of all really, really good. It seemed like a very, very nice, complete run for a band to have. And most bands don't have much longevity, you know? So I'm thinking about why it's taking so long. We haven't heard anything. Then we get a release date or a release window sometime in May or June for a new Arctic Monkeys album. And we have no single. And you know, we getting closer and closer. The release date is announced and Domino Records says there will be no single from the album and no music will be released until the whole album is released. So I thought, well, that means one of two things, right? That means either, the album sucks and they don't want anybody to know until they all run out and buy it on day one, or they really want the record to be taken as a whole. I mean, I wasn't expecting a complete concept record like the one we've gotten. And this is an album that is going to require patience from the listener, especially like the first few times around. And if you're not an Arctic Monkeys fan, especially, or you don't have a history with them, it's going to be a little bit difficult to get into this one. But my musical tastes. I mean, I am completely in love with this album and it's another home run for them. And I couldn't tell you whether it was a better album than AM or a better album than whatever people say AM or Humbug or anything at this point, but because it's hard for me to think of it as a piece with those records, but I think it's a really amazing piece of work. And the funny thing is, 4 out of 5 is kind of like a single that they could have put out before.
I was gonna, because earlier in the week you told me, you know, they didn't release a single, but it's clear which one should be the single. And I was wondering which song you meant. I had two pointed out, and 4 out of 5 was what I thought you would say. I would have loved American Sports as a single. I love that song.
Well, it's interesting because there is a video now for 4 out of 5 that they just put out. That they, you know, it must have had filmed a while ago because Alex Turner appears with and without goatee in the video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think if the Arctic Monkeys had released an album like AM in the same vein, I would have been disappointed. Yeah. I think this is the best thing they could do after such a long hiatus, coming out with something out of left field. And I also think, what a ballsy move not to release a single, because if you release 4 out of 5 as a single, there is a strong chance that people are kind of turned off by it. But with this, you know, I've been listening to it nonstop. I mean, it's probably the album I've listened to the most, you know, this week in a long time. And with this, I'm completely enamored by it. And I think that just like what happened with Suck It and See, I might have taken the pass for a few months before I dove into it had they released a single.
Mm-hmm.
As a complete work, I love it. It's funny, I get a little bit of David Bowie from this album.
Ooh, I get a lot of David Bowie from this album. I would say if I had to think of, you know, the cornerstones for this record, I would say, yeah, definitely a ton of David Bowie, especially like Aladdin Sane and Diamond Dogs kind of area.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of like the more theatrical, but the less like hit focused, records kind of after Ziggy Stardust. And then, definitely Scott Walker, who, you know, and definitely Pulp and Jarvis Cocker. I get a lot of those vibes, not just musically, but lyrically as well. I mean, lyrically, this album we could talk about for forever, probably. It's really dense, and I have to think, you know, it is a big departure from AM, but there's a couple songs on AM that I think paved the way for this direction. I was thinking about this a lot. So, number one, Party Anthem, And then the last song, I Want to Be Yours, which the lyrics were written by a poet, John Cooper Clarke, but I think his poetry has influenced Alex Turner's writing a lot on this album. So I think there is, you know, you could sense that direction to say, like, this is a slower album than their usual frenetic pace that a lot of people know the Arctic Monkeys for. It's more contemplative, and all the songs are kind of mid-tempo. There's not a lot of variation between the songs from track to track. And I think that's what is throwing a lot of people off on initial listens, because it's the definition of a grower. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say the song started to click for me the second time I listened to it, but I feel like I'm so in tune with his songwriting and the Arctic Monkeys as a whole that I was already ready for that. But I think, you know, it could take multiple listens for some people to get into this album.
I would agree. I think, yeah, it definitely, I don't know if it was two, but it definitely took me a few listens to get into it.
What were your impressions the first time? Like,
I didn't dislike it. I was a little surprised. I have to say, I'd read the NME review of it before I listened to it. So I was expecting something when they talked about this being perceived more as an Alex Turner record in a way. So I was ready for something different, but nothing like this, nothing as crafted. I thought it would, maybe it was a little more straightforward. And I just think lyrically, like, maybe it's because it's so easy to distinguish what he's talking about. I've been reading the lyrics a lot. Every song comes on and I'm reading about it. And I have this, this picture of this like hotel and casino he's talking about. And I don't think there's been an album in the last 18 months that has made me feel like this album. What I mean by that is, this makes me feel the way maybe, this is a bad example because it's a little too on the nose, but the way Arrival made me feel as a movie after, the way, this is the bad example I was going to use, Blade Runner 2049, meaning that for 3 days I just can't stop thinking about those movies.
Mm-hmm.
In this album, after, like, when I'm not listening to it, I think about this album all the time. I think about, what would it be like to be a guest at this hotel and casino? Like, what does the architecture look like? I have this picture. Maybe, you know, I look at the album cover and it's got like a little bit of orange and burnt look, and this really cool 70s furniture.
That model that's on the album cover and in the booklet for the album was apparently designed and created by Alex Turner too.
Oh, and cool.
It's in the music video for 4 Out of 5, which is this kind of like homage to Kubrick in a lot of ways. Really cool video.
I think that's perfectly put. Like, this is set in the 70s, but set in 2018 for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I keep thinking about this album all the time. And not necessarily the songs, just like, again, like this kind of universe they crafted around this hotel and casino. And I don't know that there's been many albums in the past 2 years that have made me feel that way. And maybe because it's more of a concept album, and I think it is one of the better ones. And maybe it's a little early to say that, but my initial feeling after listening to it about 25 times is is that, I am so in love with this album. And, you know, we talked about doing a mid-year kind of initial top albums of the year, and that would be very high on that list.
Oh, for sure. And talking about, like, thinking about the album, you know, it reminds me of a lot of my favorite bands. Just off the top of my head is like The National or like early REM, in that you wouldn't necessarily, when you think of a song on this record, you wouldn't necessarily be able to sing the song from beginning to end. Like, there's no song on this album after listening to it, about 25 times, that I know all the words to.
Yeah.
But there's so many little passages and lines and bits that are stuck in my head all the time. You know, I've got the chorus to Bat Phone in my head right now, or like little bits. And I'm like, oh yeah. And that makes me just want to put it back on again.
Yeah, I know.
And listen to the whole thing.
I love the opening song, Star Treatment, too. And that, even the first line, when he talks about he wanted to be one of the Strokes,
right.
Look at the mess he's made. I don't know. It's so good. So good. I like the idea too that it feels like Alex Turner in this album is he plays a character that lives in the hotel as a kind of a Vegas artist that has a residency
mm-hmm.
at the hotel and casino on the moon, which is really cool.
And there's parts of the moon that are getting gentrified now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, with taquerias,
cute new spots keep on popping up.
Yeah. It feels like we're both very much into this album. I'm glad you like the lyrics more than Elias's lyrics on the last week. But I would agree; these are very, very good lyrics.
Yeah, it would be interesting. We've had the album now for a few days, and obviously have listened to it a ton. And a lot of it's like keeps revealing itself. I wonder how we're going to feel about it towards the end of the year. I'm sure it'll still be in constant rotation. I still listen to AM all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was such a long break since that album. But I feel like this one is even, is denser. And, I like that they're not backing down from this album. They put it out as a whole. They knew it was going to be surprising to people, but they're playing bigger venues than they've ever played before around the world, huge festival headliner. And we'll see. I think the fans will come around. They seem very divided on the internet, which everything is very divided on the internet. But I think this is going to be an album that will be remembered when the Arctic Monkeys are all said and done, or their peak period is over, as a favorite amongst the fans. I just get that feeling, at least amongst like the really hardcore fans.
Yeah. What do you, they're coming to Portland in October. I've yet to buy my ticket, but I'm definitely going to go to that show. I am very curious to see what the live set list is going to be. Cause some of these songs, I can't wait to hear live, but as you said, like if you're an Arctic Monkeys fan that just came on around AM and you're like live, you might get a fair dose of this album.
Yeah, they've done like a few shows, kind of warm up shows, all of them in the US, either in California or in New York. And I think they've been doing maybe like four songs off the new record.
Mm-hmm.
And they just were on James Corden last night doing She Looks Like Fun.
Yeah.
With Cameron Avery, who, is a member of Tame Impala, who has been opening for them quite a bit and playing with them live, which I think is kind of interesting. I can't imagine a world where Alex Turner and Kevin Parker were to collaborate. That would just be, I think that's just maybe too much.
Yeah.
But their set lists have looked great. And a lot of it is Alex Turner behind keyboard, for the newer songs. But I feel like they have so many good, energetic rock songs that inserting some of the new album into a set by them is not going to, completely derail a massive rock show that people are paying for to come see.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're planning on seeing the Arctic Monkeys, I would jump on those tickets because I was just looking here and a lot of the U.S. dates are already sold out.
They're playing two shows here at the Hollywood Bowl headlining, and I've seen them at the Hollywood Bowl before. I was thinking about this. The last time they played the Hollywood Bowl was a co-headliner, and they were not the last band to play. They were the second to last band before TV on the Radio.
Hmm.
And I don't know if TV on the Radio could fill up the Hollywood Bowl these days, but the Arctic Monkeys, two dates sold out, no problem.
Well, the first date is sold out, and the two, they have a date at the Santa Barbara Bowl after those two dates, and that's sold out as well. Sold out as well. So it's sold out in Seattle. There are still tickets for Portland and Vancouver if you live in the Pacific Northwest. If you're listening to us in the UK, Manchester, London, they're playing four nights in a row, and that is sold out. Everything in the UK is sold out.
I think we won't really see an effect from with their popularity from this album until the next touring cycle. Probably it'll be interesting to see how anticipated the next record is, see how many fans they either gained or lost with Tranquility Base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, if you're a big fan of this band, there's nothing more rewarding than an album that has a lot of layers to it that is not so obvious. And there's not a lot of, especially younger bands that do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree. It took some balls. sorry to say that, but yeah.
I think it'll be something we'll be talking about all year, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So let us know how you feel about this new Arctic Monkeys album. It's so divisive. I'm sure some of our listeners have some feelings about it. We'd love to hear from you. We'll definitely revisit it as time goes by.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I will be seeing them in just a couple weeks in Barcelona.
That's right. Oh, why don't you tell us about that?
Headlining Primavera. Yeah, so I'll be headed over covering the Primavera Sound Festival in Barcelona, Spain. It's like 2.5 weeks from now. Very excited. I've always wanted to go to this festival. We've got Arctic Monkeys, Bjork, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Lord amongst the headliners, a lot of great bands on the undercard as well. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, sounds great. Everybody, the PSA at the beginning that you listen to and aren't listening to this part, but if you still are, this is another reason to follow us. Hunter, is going to be a member of the press at Primavera, and we're really excited because I think every year we've talked about the lineup at Primavera, it's been, if not the best, one of our favorites of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, this year is no exception. I would say it's got to be the best lineup pretty much of any festival I've seen in the world. So
yeah.
Can't wait for that. So, and great. Nick, do you think we can just say whatever we want at this part of the podcast because nobody's listening? Is that, are we going to just encourage this lackadaisical behavior on the part of our listeners?
No. Listen okay. Again. We have to stay professional.
All right, I won't start spewing nonsense here.
Okay, good.
All right, but we'll be back really soon. Check out the interview with Dead Tongues, and we'll be back to talk about Beach House really soon. I know a lot of people are anticipating that. So we'll see you guys shortly.
Sounds good. See you.
Bye.